Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Avodah Zarah Daf Mem Dalet. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our home page. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the Daf before the Shiur, and even better, order your personal volume of this Maseches. Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. At the end of our previous shiur, we learned a Mishnah that featured a machlokes tanoim, machlokes between Rabbi Yossi and the Chachamim, in how to deal with the remnants of a ground-up avodah zarah. What do you do with the remaining, what we could refer to as the ofar? According to Rabbi Yossi, one would take the ground-up avodah zarah, the particles, and scatter it to the wind or throw it into the sea. According to the Chachamim, the scattering into the wind is not such a simple solution, because their feeling is that wherever it lands, it then can turn into fertilizer material. The term used in the Mishnah is zevel. Zevel is fertilizer. This machlokes has been featured with our markings by the use of a house image, point facing up, in other words, rooftop up, that would go like Rabbi Yossi. Rooftop down will represent the shita that argues, the Amru Lo, or the Chachamim that argue. As we go on in the Gemara, we're going to have to keep track of this back and forth, this play-by-play element, and we'll do that with the assistance of these markings. The Gemara at the very bottom line of Mem Gimel Amud Beis, the line with which we will open our shiur, features a brisa, a Tanaic source that continues to the upper part of Mem Dalad Omid Aleph. That which appears in frames in our Gemara marking system are Tanaic sources, as you are all familiar from having learned the introductory material on the marking system. Tanya, the Tanaic source begins, Omar Lahen Rabbi Yossi. Rabbi Yossi cites to defend his position a pasuk, and this is Valokvar Ne'amar. It says in the context of the Egel Hazov, Ve'es chataschem asher asisem es ho'egel lo kachti, vo'esroif oisoi bo'esh, vo'ekois oisoi tochoin heitev, ad asher dok le'ofor, v'ashlich es aforo el hanachal ha'yored min ahor. The pasuk, without getting into the literal translation, that one can always look into a Tanakh with a translation, but what we see in this pasuk is Moshe Rabbeinu tells us that he took the golden calf and he ground it up and he threw the debris into the river. The source of the question is coming from the issue of his having ground it up, and the Rashi points out in a Dibur Masil, Ve'es Chataschem. This Dibur Masil is, as far as the printed Gemaras are concerned, is out of location. It should be at the top of the page. It appears in the Gemaras on the fourth narrow line, but it's pointed out that it really belongs at the top. The Rashi says, Mivo'echois oisoi tochoin komoisiv. From that part of the pasuk, and what we've done, we've dashed underlined the word Ve'echois to bring this point out. It's from this point that the question is being raised, or that Rabbi Yossi is making his point. Avo mivo esroif, from the fact that it was burnt up, which appeared prior to the grinding up, that's lav tiyuftahi, that does not present a challenge. The chokama de lo shochik le, that as long as it hasn't been ground up, mechubar ba'dodi, it's still intact, it's still, it might be burnt, but it's still in one piece. The einu nas zevel, it can't become fertilizer when it's a solid mass, even if it happens to be burnt. It needs to be ground up. So from this point in the pasuk, Rabbi Yossi is trying to show his point that, well, Moshe Rabbeinu took the Egel Hazov, which would have constituted a type of idol, and he ground it up. After having been ground up, would it not become fertilizer? Omru lo, the Rabbonin said back to Rabbi Yossi, Misham Raya, from that you're trying to bring proof to your position. Harehu Omer, but it says, it says there, Vayizer al Pnei Hamayim, he scattered the pieces, the fragments on water, Vayashk es Pnei Yisrael, and he gave the water with the ground up remnants of the golden calf, and he gave it to the Bnei Yisrael, to the Jewish people, to drink. His whole intention there in the grinding up and then it being scattered over the water was for them to drink it, to be tested out like a Sota woman who also drinks water with Beis HaMikdash Ofor mixed in, and he was guilty, so punishment would come to him. So you can't bring a raya from the case of the golden calf being ground up that there is no concern for fertilizer, when his whole intention was to use the filings of the Egel Hazov to test them out. Amalem Rabbi Yossi. So Rabbi Yossi responds, Valo Kvar Nemar, but there's a pasuk that says Vegam Ma'acho, this is a name, Aim Aso Melf, the mother of the king Aso, He Sira Migvira, Asher Oso, Vayidek, Vayisrof, Benachal Kidron. There's a Girsa that says here that Asher Oso, Lashero Mifletis, Vayidek, Vayisrof, Benachal Kidron. This woman was a problematic woman. She was involved with mother of the king, and she was an idolatrous woman. She was a woman involved with idol worship. She was removed from her position of importance. That's what Rashi explains here as a hesira migvira. She was removed from her position of hishpila mimalchus. Rashi says she was removed from the monarchy. And it also says, and this is what's important for us, that she had made an image that was part of her idolatrous worship. It was vayidek. It was smashed and ground up and burnt. Omrulo, the Rabbonin respond, Misham Raya, from that case you're trying to bring proof. That's no proof to your position. The fact that it was ground up and then it seemed to be scattered into the Nahal Kidron with a fertilizing potential. They said that's no proof. Nahal Kidron Eino Megadel Tzmochim. That area called Nahal Kidron where it was scattered is a place that nothing grows there. We have a bracketed section. If we skip the brackets momentarily, you will see Omar Lehen Rabbi Yossi. Rabbi Yossi responds with another pasuk to defend his position. Before we go on in the Gemara, though, let us take a look at the note that we have that accompanies these brackets. Shimush, the note is found in the inside margin where we have a corresponding star. Shimush begimel kvutzos harishonos shel sograyim be'omud zeh. The use of these three, the three upcoming sections that are bracketed off. So as you look on in the Gemara, there are several sections that you can see with brackets. In fact, we have a bracket length indicator to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara texts. And each, you can see the next three length indicators are what we're referring to right now. Their purpose is, the note continues to say, miuod lahatzmi diver biyosi uchuvas hachomim zelo zeh, to create a sense of continuity in the back and forth, what I call the rapid back and forth structure between them. The sections in the brackets will be dealing with specific details of whatever response the Gemara just gave, whatever answer the Rabbana just gave. The Gemara will be referring to those answers, and then Rabbi Yossi will appear as with his new source afterwards. So, as we said, if one bears this in mind when he encounters the bracketed section, he will note that afterwards we'll see Rabbi Yossi's response to whatever the Rabbanan had said before the bracketed section. With that having been said, we can now learn the Gemara straight with the section in brackets. The Rabbanan just got finished saying to Rabbi Yossi that you can't bring a proof to your position that it's okay simply to grind up the idol and scatter it from the case of the idol being ground up and scattered into the Nahal Kidron, because Nahal Kidron is a place that there is nothing that is cultivated. So on that, the Gemara asks, in the bracketed section, Veloy, is that really so? Vatanya, we have the following source. This source deals with the korbanos that were slaughtered in the Azor of the Beis HaMikdash. There was then the blood that ran out, in this case, blood of korbanos that were whose blood was sprinkled in the Azora, and there was korbanos whose blood was sprinkled in the sanctuary itself, where the paroches was between the Kiddush and Kiddush HaKadoshim, and the remnants of the blood, that which remained after the blood, after the sprinklings, were then poured over the base of the Mizbeach. That's called the Shiorim. The Shirayim were poured over the base of the Mizbeach, and then from that point the blood ran out of the Beis HaMikdash and through a channel, and eventually found its way to the place we just referred to called Nahal Kidron. The source says, Elu v'Elu, the bloods, the remnant, the remaining blood that we just referred to, after it was poured over the base of the Mizbeach, would flow out of the base of Migdash, Misarvin ba'amo, they would mix in the channel that was found in the courtyard of the base of Migdash, V'yoytzel Nahal Kidron, and would then flow into this area called Nahal Kidron, V'nimkorim leganonim lezevel u'moalin bohen. The blood was, there was a financial arrangement made with the gardeners, with the people that owned vegetable patches outside, namely in that Nahal Kidron area, and it was, the blood was sold to them as fertilizing material, and if they wouldn't pay for it, there would be a prohibition of me'ila. We'll call this a type of me'ila derabbanan. We're not going to get into details of the me'ila issue, but for our purposes, what do we see? We see that there was cultivation in Nahal Kidron, and if there was, then Rabbi Yossi would have a good point that image of the aim of Asa Mech that Macha made, that idolatrous form, was ground up, and it was then scattered in the Nahal Kidron, with a place that things were cultivated, and it doesn't seem that we're concerned with the fertilizing aspect. The Gemara answers no. There is no, we can't bring a kasha on the Rabbonon from here. Mekoymus Mekoymus Yeshbo, the area called Nahal Kidron was divided into different regions. Yesh Mokum Megadol Tzmochem, there was a place that was cultivated, V'yesh Mokum She'en Megadol Tzmochem, and part of that area called Nahal Kidron was not cultivated. So apparently it was in that area that was not cultivated that they burnt, that they ground up the image that the Ma'achol had made, and hence the Rabbonin are still in a firm position where we don't see any evidence of idols ground up and then scattered without concern for Zevel. The Gemara at this point just makes a reference back to that which we saw in the source. There was a reference to a Mifletzes. You can see this with the arrow that we have here, pointing, corresponding to the arrow above. You must my miflatzta. What was that thing that she made? Omar Rav Yehuda, davle mafli leitzenusa. The term mifletzes is something that was, it was mafli leitzenusa, which would mean a lot of, or some type of extraordinary leitzonus. Leitzonus is foolishness. And what are we referring to? So here it's described by the Gemara, Kedetani Rav Yosef. Rav Yosef explains, he teaches, Kemin Zachrus Osta La, Vaisa Niv'eles Loi B'chol Yom. This image that she made had a type of male. Now we're talking about a woman. This is Macha, a woman that made an image that had a zachrus, is a male organ, with which she had conducted intimacy with this image. That's called the mifletzes, and hence mafli leitzenusa, extraordinary foolishness or waywardness. Continuing back with Rabbi Yossi and his attempting to support himself with quotes. Omar Elohim Rabbi Yossi. Rabbi Yossi says to the Chum, V'alo kvar ne'amar, V'kitas nechash ha-nechoshes, Asher also Moshe. Moshe Rabbeinu had made an image of a serpent that served to halt a plague that had befallen the Jews in the Midbar. And now that serpent was eventually viewed as an idol by later generations, and that was ground up. And that's what this pasuk features. It was ground up. So we see that idols, those things are ground up, and then they're debris scattered, and we don't seem to be concerned with the zevel aspect. Omrulo, the Chachamim respond, Misham Raya, from there you're trying to bring proof to your position? Hare hu Omer. The pasuk concerning that snake image that Moshe Rabbeinu made, the Gemara will explain before we read the Gemara inside, it was really made from funds provided out of pocket from Moshe Rabbeinu's personal funds. It wasn't owned, it wasn't a public form. It was personal possession of Moshe Rabbeinu. Now, if you'll tell me that someone then went ahead and worshipped it, that would not make it idolatrous. There's a concept of a person cannot make forbidden something that's not his. And being that the snake was privately owned, the fact that the public worshipped it doesn't make it into an idol. And therefore, it's not a prohibited item whatsoever, and therefore that it may have been ground up later to prevent the people from stumbling over it in worship of it, but the debris or the filings of that ground up snake were not idolatrous in the very first place. Omrulo, reading now in the Gemara, Misham Raya, from there, from the case of the Nechash HaNechoshes that Moshe Rabbeinu made, you're trying to bring a proof to your position? Harehu Omer. The pasuk regarding that snake said in its outset, says, Vayomer Hashem el Moshe, Asei Lecha Sorof. Sorof is the snake. And the word Lecha in that pasuk, Lecha equals Mishel Lecha. It's from your out-of-pocket funds, your own monies. The Ein Adam Oyser Dover Shena Shelo. And a person cannot make forbidden something that's not his. And since it was personally owned by Moshe Rabbeinu, it didn't belong to anyone else. The fact that others bow down to it or worshipped it, that would not make it forbidden. Once again, you see we have a little bracketed section with Rabbi Yossi right afterwards responding. But we continue in the brackets. V'hosam bedinhu dekusi lo haviksorich. And as far as the snake story is concerned, when the pasuk describes that he ground it up, which was, if I'm not mistaken, is a reference to Chizkiyo HaMelech, who ground it up, that really wasn't even necessary. The ketusi, that's what the Gemara says, that bedin, by letter of the law, ketusi lo haviksorich, it didn't need to be ground up. So why did he grind it up? When he saw that the Jews were erring, following it, namely they had viewed it as something with divine powers and started worshipping it. That's tohu, was to make a mistake. They started worshipping it. Omad v'kitso. So he got up and he ground it up. But once again, this image itself was not theirs in the first place, so that they would have that their service or their idolatrous practices to it would have any effect. Omar Lahen, Rabbi Yossi comes back and says, "Valo kvar ne'amar vayazvu shom esatzabeim vayisoeim David vanoshav." The pasuk describes asabeim or idols. And it says Vayisoeim Dovo Vanoshev. Now the word Vayisoeim is understood to mean that they took it and scattered it. The Rabbanan respond to this and say as follows. We skip the brackets for a moment. Omru Loi Misham Raya, from the story involving David Melech and his men, you're trying to bring a proof to your position. Hare Hu Omer, it says in Sefer Divrei Hayomim, Vayisrafu Ba'esh. It says they burnt it. Umidalok Si Vayisrafeim Vayisoeim. It doesn't say there that they burnt it and then Vayisoeim. Shma mino vayisoeim mamish. That vayisoeim does not mean like you thought, meant scatter it to the wind, but rather it means carried away. So you can't bring, so the Rabbanon are saying to Rabbi Yossi, you can't bring a proof from over there from the word vayisoeim that it has to do with scattering, with, you know, grinding up and scattering it to the wind. Let's go back over the Gemara. We go now once again to Rabbi Yossi, who quotes the pasuk from involving David HaMelech and his dealing with idols. It says, "Vayazvu sham esasabam," the enemies that they vanquished left their idols behind. "Vayisoeim David vanoshav," and Rabbi Yossi wants to say once again, as we said before, that "Vayisoeim" means he scattered them to the winds. Umay mashma dehayvisem David lishna dezriyuhu. From where do you see that the word "Vayisoeim" has to do with scattering? Answer, Kidim et Targum Rav Yosef. As Rav Yosef explains another pasuk, not related to this, but the Targum is what's important. The pasuk says, Tizoreim, v'ruach tisoeim, to scatter it, and the wind will carry it off in a scattering fashion. U'metargaminon, tazrinon, tazrinon, v'ruach tatatalinon. The Targum, the translation of that pasuk with the word tisoeim in it is the scatter it, and the wind will carry off the filings to all directions. So when the pasuk mentions Vayisoeim David Vanoshav, Rabbi Yossi feels you can translate that as having to do with scattering into the wind, and the wind will carry the pieces off into all directions. Omru lo, so the Rabbanan say back to him, Mishom Raya, from there you're trying to bring proof. Areyu Omer, it says in Sefer Divrei Hayomim, which is the Book of Chronicles, the Sefer Divrei Hayomim parallels the rest of the Tanakh. In other words, it's a type of review, if you will. Of course, what we're saying is a very simple approach to the matter, but for our purposes, it's necessary for our Gemara. And the fact that the psukim parallel each other, we can see incidents that were referred to in earlier books of the Tanakh referred to in Divrei Hayomim. So we have this incident referred to in Divrei Hayomim as follows. It says, "Vayisrefu ba'esh." Regarding those idols, it says they burnt them in the fire. "Umidalok si vayisrefein vayisaim." It doesn't say they burnt them and then vayisaim. Shma mino vayisoeim mamish. So therefore, we have to conclude that vayisoeim means they carried them away intact, not ground up. That's the Chachamim's response to Rabbi Yossi. At this point, we encounter another bracketed section. However, this is not part of the series of brackets that we indicated before. So let's glance at the note we have on the inside margin. Sograim elu einom l'shem dilug. These are not for the purposes of skipping. Ela laharois shadu siach ben Rabbi Yossi Chachamim istayim. It's rather to demonstrate that the back and forth discussion between Rabbi Yossi and the Chachamim ended at this point, with the Chachamim, as far as they were concerned, rejecting Rabbi Yossi's last proof. The Gemara, though, continues, Mikol Mokom, Koshu Kroya Hadodi. We seem to have a contradiction between the Psukim and Divrei Yomim and Sefer Shmuel. Let's go over that. And we can see, to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text, where the Gemara cites the different Psukim, we have a diamond very shortly, and another diamond above, which is featuring the pasuk Vayazvu there, which is from Shmuel Beis. So we have a pasuk from Divrei Hayomim Aleph Perek Yud Dalet, and the pasuk before from Shmuel Beis, which we have to resolve, because as far as the Chachamim are concerned, the incident involved them carrying it away, and on the other hand, you have a pasuk that says they burnt it. So how do you resolve this? So the Gemara answers, Ki the Rav Huna Rami. Rav Huna raises this seeming contradiction. Ksiv Vayomer David Vayisrefu Ba'esh. David says, commanded that they shall be burnt. Uksiv Vayisayim. The other pasuk says they were carried away, indicating they weren't burnt. Lo Kasha, there is no contradiction. It's a matter of time, historical development of events. It says, Kan Koidem Shebo Itay Agiti. The pasuk that indicates that he burnt it, in other words, he had no other option other than to burn those idols, is before Itai Hagiti, came. Ittai Agiti was a Gentile, an idol worshiper, that came on the scene. Kan la'achar shebo Ittai Agiti. The pasuk that indicates they carried away, that's after Ittai Agiti showed up. Ittai Agiti was capable of voiding them, of being mevatel the avodah zarah. So before Ittai Agiti showed up, David encountered these idols and they said, we have no choice other than to burn them. After Ittai Agiti came, said, well, we don't have to burn them. We can have him void them. And then, and once he voids them, we can carry them away and use it for our own purposes. Dichtiv. Vayikach es ateres malkom me'al roshoi u'mishkol kikor zohov. And they took the crown of their idol, who's called Malcolm, and it says that the crown was the weight of it was a kikar zohav, so a certain weight. Umi shari, how can they take it? Isuri hanoa ninu, the appurtenances of idols are forbidden to get benefit from. Omer of Nachman, Ittai Agiti bo bitlos. So Rav Nachman says that this Gentile came along, his name was Ittai Agiti, came and he voided it. He was mevatelit, and that explains why they could take the crown of this idol. The Pasuk said, Umishkola Kikar Zohov. This crown, by the way, was then used as the king's crown. David HaMelech would then wear this crown. The pasuk says after it describes they took it, it says Vatihi Arosh David. That is the pasuk that we just quoted is found in the Rashi. So the question is, once we have said that it was then on David's head, the Gemara can ask, well, Hechi Motzi Monachlo, if it had this weight of a Mishkol Kikar Zov, how could he possibly wear it? That is a very heavy weight. Omar Rav Yudah Marav, Re'uya Hoysa Lonuach Al Rosh David. It doesn't mean that he actually wore it, but rather it means that it was fit to be worn by him. This issue of being fit to be worn by him, in other words, it had the dimensions of his head, will be discussed later on in the Gemara. A second approach with regard to this very heavy crown and it then eventually being on David's head, Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Chanino Omar, Evan She'eves Hoisabo, Dahavis Dorolo. Evan She'eves is a magnet, so that when David HaMelech was sitting on his throne, this very heavy crown was positioned over his head and supported in midair, so to speak, supported from above his head by a magnet. A magnet was drawing it upwards, so that David HaMelech didn't have to bear the weight of this crown. And on the other hand, he was in effect wearing it, or it was positioned on his head without him feeling any weight pressure from it, being that it was supported by a magnet above head. A third approach, Belozer Omar, Evan Yukora Hoisabah Shishava Kikazov. The crown did not have this weight called kikar zov. A kikar zov is a very heavy weight of gold. If the weight of it was described as a kikar zov, what it really means is that this crown had a precious gem in it that whose value would be equal to the value of a kikar zov. The pasuk says, "Zois hoisoli ki pikudecha notzarti." My ko'omar. What is the meaning of this? Ochi ko'omar. B'schar shepikudecha notzarti. Zois hoisoli le'edus. David HaMelech is declaring that in honor or in reward for the fact that I kept your mitzvahs, I then benefited in having this as testimony. My edusa. What is the testimony that he is referring to? Omer Yeshua ben Levi, Shehoya Manicha B'mokoyim Tfilin V'hoimosoy. The crown fit, sat on his head where Tfilin are positioned, tefillin are worn around one's head. This crown fit on David HaMelech's head, where ordinarily he would wear his tefillin, the whole muscle, and it fit him. It was like a perfect fit. The Gemara asks, "V'ha'kaboy anuchi tefillin?" But what about his needing to wear tefillin? How can he wear the crown where the tefillin were supposed to be? He has to wear tefillin. Amar b'Shmuel b'Rav Yitzchok, "Mokoy meish boroy shiroy lo niach boy shtei tefillin." As far as the halacha is concerned, there's enough room on a person's head for two pairs of tefillin to be worn at once, so that he was able to wear the tefillin. And the tefillin would sit in a legal location, in a proper location, and wear the crown at the same time, being that the crown would occupy another circumference of head that would have been fit for a second pair of tefillin. Vayotziu es ben hamelach vayinu alov es hanezer veso edus. The pasuk is explained here in Rashi. Vayotziu ben Amalach. Rashi says, "B'yoyosh k'siv b'ven amatzia." This is a pasuk referring to Yoyosh. Shehechbiya oisoi achoisoi shoga salias kol zera amlucha. Yoyosh was a survivor, if you will, because Asalia was a woman who killed all of the surviving descendants of the monarchy, and he was a lone descendant. This Yoash was a lone descendant after she committed this all of these multiple murders. Ukshigodal Hotsiu, the Nosalov HaNezer Le'edus, when he grew up, when he grew, he was taken out of hiding, and this crown was put on his head as testimony, Shehu Mizeram Lucha, to show that he was from royal blood. So the Gemara now explains further. After having read the pasuk made mention of the word nazir. So nazir zuklila, the word nazir is a reference to a crown. The word edus, what is that? So here the Gemara features, we have a triangle featured here, which is a series indicator of comments made by Rabbi Yehuda Amar Rav. So, Amar Yehuda Amar Rav, Edus hu lebeis David. This crown served as testimony concerning the house of David. Shekol haroi lemalchus, anyone who was fit to serve as the king, hol mosoi. This crown miraculously would fit their head. V'chosheina roi lemalchus, ein hol mosoi. Someone who was not fit to be the king, he may have come from the house of David, but he was not fit to be the king, then this thing, ein hol mosoi, would not fit on his head. Omar Rav Yehuda Omar Rav. Let's reread the Gemara. We skipped a little bit there. The pasuk says, "Va'adoniya ben Chagis misnase lemor ani em loich." Adoniya was a son of David, who at the end of David HaMelech's days, he wanted to take the throne for himself, and he said, "I will rule." Omar Rav Yehuda Omar Rav. The pasuk said, "Misnase lemor." What does this mean? Shemisnase means he sought lahomo. He sought that crown that he was hoping that the crown would fit his head. As we mentioned just before, that the crown would serve as a sign that the one whom it fit would be fit to be the king. So he was hoping that the crown would fit him to show that it was the king. That's shemisnase lahomo v'lahomo. So, but in reality, it did not fit on his head. The pasuk says, "Vayas loy rechev uporashim v'chamishim ish rotsim lefonav." My Rabusayu. Rashi explains that when the pasuk says "Vayas lo," it implies that there was something unusual about these men. So the Gemara is asking, what was that feature? What was special about them, of these 50 men? Tana, kulam netulei tchol v'chalkukei kapoi soraglayim hoyu. The tchol is one of the
one of a person, human being's internal organs. This organ was removed from them. It is said that this organ causes a person to feel weighty, to feel heavy. Now, it was removed, giving them a feeling of lightness. That means the flesh at the bottom of their feet was removed, was scraped away, so that when they would be able to run on thorns and other thistles and not feel it. So these were, we can say, special people in the sense that they were runners, and they were able to be runners and run even over surfaces that ordinarily a person would feel pain. They were able to run and with speed, being that their tchol was removed, and not feel any pain. The Mishnah. Shoal Proklos ben Flusfus. We are at the top of Mem Dalet Amud Beis. Proklos ben Flusfus is the name of a min, who was a Gentile. A Gentile renegade. And he asked, Shoal Proklos ben Flusfus es Rav Gamliel be'akoi, she'roiches b'merchos shafruditi. Rav Gamliel was bathing in the bathhouse of Afruditi. Afruditi is the name of an idol, and there was a bathhouse that was in the courtyard of this idol, and Rav Gamliel was bathing in that bathhouse. Omar lo, so this fellow Proklos asked Rav Gamliel, "Kosev v'tarasam, it says in your Torah, v'lo yidbak biyotcha me'uma min acherim, that there should be nothing of the cherim of idols cleaving unto your hands." In other words, the pasuk is saying you shall derive no benefit from idols. Why is it then that you are bathing in the bathhouse of this idol? Omar lo, he answered, Ein meshivin b'merchatz. One is not allowed to respond in a bathhouse. Ukshiyotz omar lo, and when he exited the bathhouse, Rabbi Gamliel said to him the following points. We have used numberings in the Mishnah, and a note on the outside margin, misparnu es hatainus. We've numbered off the claims kedei liayil mitziosam b'meshech sugyas hagemara, in order to assist in following the points discussed in the Gemara itself. So what we'll see here is we'll have a number of points that Rav Gamliel mentioned to this renegade, to this idol worshipper, and we will leave it to the Gemara to elaborate on the points. So let's continue now in the Mishnah. We said that as he exited the bathhouse, when he was outside, Rav Gamliel said to him, Ani lo bosi begvula, hi ba begvuli. I didn't come to it, it came to me. The word gvul is literally a border. So I didn't come to within its borders, it came to within my borders. Second point, Ein omrim nase merchatz noi lafruditi, ela omer nase afruditi noi lamerchatz. It's not as if the bathhouse is a beautification of the Afruditi. Rather, the Afruditi is serving as a beautification of the bathhouse. Dover acher. Another point, Im noistim loch mamon harbe. If someone would give you a lot of money, Rabbi Gamliel is addressing this nochri, this idol worshipper. He says, if someone would pay you a lot of money, would you go in front of your idol naked and urinate in front of it? And this idol is positioned over a biv, a type of pipe, and everyone is urinating in front of it. Another point, Lo Namar Elo Elohehem. The Pasuk in Dvorim, Perikud Beis, Pasuk Beis, we've written the Pasuk on the side of the Gemara. You can see it says, Abe Tabdun es Koha Makoimois Asher Ovdu Shom Hagoyim Asher Atem Yorshim Oisom Es Elohim Al Horim Horamim Vahagvois Vitachas Kolei Tranon. It says that the pasuk indicates you shall destroy all of the places that the Gentiles that you are now taking over, that all the places that they worship their gods. And we understand es shenoyeg boy mishum Eloha aser, that which you treat as a god, that is forbidden. Es sheino noeg bo mishum Eloha muter, but something you don't treat as a god, that's not forbidden. Now the Gemara looks upon what happened in the Mishnah and raises a question. We have an arrow to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text, indicating that you should look for the above mentioned arrow. At that point in the Mishnah above, you noticed he said to the goy, they were in the bathhouse, and he said, "I can't answer you in the bathhouse." The issue that the Gemara discusses here is featured in our topic heading under the Nosei, the outside margin, Osir Loimar Divrei Kedusha Bebeis HaMerchatz. There is a prohibition of speaking matters of holiness, Torah-related matters, in a bathhouse. Well, when Rabbi Gamliel said to him, he says, was quoted in the Mishnah, Ein Meshiva B'merchatz, that itself is a point of Torah law. Namely, the Torah law says, if one opens up a Shulchan Aruch, one will see that one is not allowed to converse in a bathhouse. So what was he doing saying that particular line in the bathhouse? That's the Gemara's question. And this happens to be a long question, as you can see by the long question indicator to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara text. You see a kuf that's encircled with a vertical dashed line. The Gemara asks, V'hechi ovid hachi, how can he do thusly, namely, how can he say the sentence, Ein Meshivan B'merchatz, V'amar Rabba Baruchana, Amar B'yochanan. B'chol mokoi muter laharher, in all places it's muter to think divrei Torah, Chutz mi beis hamerchatz and mi beis hakiseh, with the exception of the time one spends in a bathhouse or a bathroom. V'chiteima b'loshon chol omarle, you might say that that which allowed Rabbi Gamliel to communicate this to the goy was because he said it in non-Hebrew. He said b'loshon chol. V'ho'amar Abaye, but Abaye already taught 2 points. Dvorim shel chol, mundane matters, common matters. Weather, how's the family feeling? Those kind of things. Mutar l'oymer b'loshon kodesh. It's allowed to be spoken in a bathhouse in Hebrew. Dvorim shel kodesh, however, matters whose content is holy, asur l'oymer b'loshon chol. It would be forbidden to say it even in a foreign tongue in the bathhouse. And we've dashed underlined this because this is the key problem. Osir l'omer b'loshon chol. So the idea that maybe what gave license to Amaliel speaking in the bathhouse was because he said it in Latin or in Greek. Not true. That wouldn't work. The Gemara answers with a clarification. Tana, we have a teaching, a Tanaic source that clarifies the Mishnah. It says kishiyotza. Omar lo ein meshivan b'merchatz. When Rabbi Gamliel exited, he told Pruplus, he said to him, "Listen, I was quiet in the bathhouse. I didn't answer you because one is not allowed to answer while in the merchatz." Notice we've dashed underlined the word kishiyotza, which is the key part of the answer. It's only upon exiting did Rabbi Gamliel say anything of a Torah matter to this goy. At this point, we have a slash, indicating that that which follows in the Gemara is a new thought pattern, new string of ideas. When we say new, of course, we're sticking to the Mishnah that we just learned, but what follows doesn't tie into the issue that was just discussed in the Gemara. Continuing in the Gemara now, Omar of Chama bar Yosef, Omar Rebbe, Omar Rebbe Hoshaya. Rav Chama bar Yosef quotes Rebbe Hoshaya and says, "Tshuva genuva heshivo Rav Gamliel le'oisei hegmon." Reb Chama is quoting Reb Hoshaya. So we've called Reb Hoshaya Aleph. Reb Hoshaya is of the position that the responses that Rabbi Gamliel gave to that hegemon, to that Gentile official, were inaccurate. Ve'ani omer eino genuva. Rabbi Chama himself, on his own, says they were not inaccurate. Let's look at the note we have in the outside margin under the heading Nosei Mivneh. You notice a diamond is featured. Four deos v'hasbir machlokes ha'amoroyim im shuvas Rabbi Gamliel hoya shuva genuva oiloi. So as we go on in the Gemara will be trying to figure out these two statements, or the analysis that Rav Chama just presented to us. Rav Chama just said that Rav Oshaya claimed that the things that Rav Gamliel was saying to the hegemon, to the Pruklus, were inaccurate. So that's Rav Oshaya's position. Rav Chama says back that they were not genuva, they were not inaccurate. The question, as we go on in the Gemara, is to discover what was the claimed inaccuracy, and then what was the what is the demonstration of it not being inaccurate. We've numbered off these the sections of Gemara with a numbering system that you find to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara. We see four stages, if you will, or four opinions presented. The first is number one, and then number two is opposite the second to last narrow line, where Abaye offers his analysis. And then three is Rav Simi Bar Chiya offers his analysis, and finally Rabba Bar Ula his analysis. The Gemara, my genuvse, what might be the explanation behind Rav Oshaya's comment that Rav Gamliel's statement was inaccurate? The Ka'omar Lo, we have a little number in parentheses. There's a note that we have in the outside margin. Hamispar besagrayim metuamim im mispar hatayne shemofir b'mishnah. The numbers that we see in parentheses as we go on in the Gemara will correspond to the number that it appeared in the Mishnah. So this three is a reference to the number three that you saw circled in the Mishnah. That was under the phrase there was start with Dover Acher in Noisim Lachmam and Harbe. What happened over there? So the Rav Gamliel said to the hegemon, or he said to Pruklus, he said to him, if they would pay you a lot of money, would you go to your idol naked and urinate in front of it? So here the Gemara continues. Ma genufse, what might be the inaccuracy of what Rav Gamliel said? The Kamalo. Well, Rav Gamliel said to the Pruklus, he said, Zu oimedes al pi habiv, the idol is standing on a pipe, v'chol odom mashtin b'fonan, everyone is urinating in front of it. So what was Rav Gamliel trying to accomplish by that? He's trying to show that it's not at all an idol, because if it were really an idol, it wouldn't have been positioned over a refuse pipe. So we ask, or more accurately, Rabbi Oshaya was bothered by this claim of Rav Gamliel. V'chimashtin b'foneho mayhavi, and even if one would urinate in front of the idol, would that diminish from its idolatrous status? V'ho'ama Rava. Rava, in another location, said, Pa'or yochiach, shem mifarin lefonov b'chol yom ve'eno botel. The idol known as Baal Pa'or, people would reveal themselves, they would defecate in front of it, and that did not void the idol. So, and it would remain forbidden. So, how could Rav Gamliel try to accomplish his position in legitimatizing his use of the bathhouse by trying to prove that it wasn't really an idol by virtue of the fact that people were urinating in front of it? That doesn't show it's not an idol. Pa'or shows us that people would defecate in front of it and it remained an idol. So Rav Gamliel's attempt to show it being not an idol is a non-successful claim. V'ani Omer, this represents Rav Chama's approach, or his reaction to Rav Hoshaya by saying, Eino Kenuva, Rav Gamliel was not saying something inaccurate. Zu Avodosa Bekach, the Pa'or is served by this disparaging behavior. That's something unique to Pa'or. However, Vizu, Ein Avodosa Bekach, the Aphroditi, is not characterized by that by this service. Aphroditi wasn't served by defecation or by urination. Therefore, if the people were urinating in front of it, they weren't urinating in front of it as an act of service of it. Rather, that itself demonstrated that it's probably not an idol that's worshipped. Because if it were, they would certainly not have done that. Therefore, Rav Gamliel's point number three would be a good response. Abaye Omar. Abaye now presents his take on these two positions. The position of Rav Hoshaya, he'll now explain what was intended by saying that it was a tshuva genuva, and he will also present the Ani Omer, how Rav Chama would have said it's not a tshuva genuva. So Abaye goes on, genuvsa mehocha, de ka'omar le. That which Rav Gamliel said, and we have a little one. This corresponds to the first of Rav Gamliel's responses to that Gentile. Rav Gamliel said, "Ani lo bosi begvula, v'hi bo begvuli. I didn't come to it. It, the Avodah Zorah, came to me, so to speak." What is Rav Gamliel saying by that? He's saying that the Merchatz was there first. I was using the Merchatz. Later on, they decided to bring an Avodah Zorah into that Merchatz. Rashi on the Mishnah says, on the third line from the top, He bo begvuli, sha merchatz koidim lo. The merchatz, the bathhouse, was there before the idol. Va merchatz nasa l'chol ha-bo lirchoitz. The bathhouse was made for everyone who wants to bathe. V'lo kol heimeno shete goizeles esarabim. And it's not within the power of this idol to then rob the public, to by its appearance on the scene to then stop them from using it. Now, is this point accurate? Or, as Abaye is explaining now, Rav Hoshaya felt that this is the point that has in it a level of inaccuracy. Let's focus on that now. V'chibo b'gvulo mayhave, which means, and if the Avodah Zorah was there first, and then they set up the bathhouse, would that be a problem? In other words, from the reading of the Mishnah, one would get the feeling that if that were the case, that would have been a problem. In other words, if the Avodah Zorah was there first and then they erected a bathhouse, that would have been a problem. So at this point, we're going to say that even that wouldn't have been a problem. So in the response that Rav Gamliel mentioned, point one, there was a level of inaccuracy. Once again, where Rav Gamliel's response indicated that there might be a distinction of who came first, we are saying now, Rav Hoshaya would have claimed, according to Abaye, that distinction should not be made. Let's see how it's developed in the Gemara. V'chibo b'gvulo mayhave, and even if I had come to it, namely that the Avodah Zorah, the idol, was there first, and then
the bathhouse was erected and I came to the use that bathhouse, would that have been a problem? No. The Hotanan, we have a source, Avodas Kochavim, an idol, Sheyesh Lo Merchatz Ogina, that has a bathhouse or a garden that were built around this idol. Nehen in Mehen, Shelo B'Tovo. One is allowed to use them, to use the bathhouse or enjoy the garden. Shaloi b'toiva. Rashi says, Shaloi yachzik toiva l'kumrim. Provided he doesn't thank the priests, he doesn't acknowledge his benefit to the priests. Ubano lo mitzar. But to benefit from the bathhouse or the garden, the benefit from those items itself is not prohibited. Come on. As the Gemara will say later on, Ein hektish lavos kochavim, akshi yakriv lefonov b'tikruvas. Merely dedicating things to an idol does not make it forbidden. The only time something becomes forbidden is if something is actually offered in a sacrificial capacity to the idol. But merely dedicating something to the idol would not render that thing forbidden. So that if there was an idol and they built a bathhouse in the proximity of the idol and declared and dedicated, this is the bathhouse, that we're dedicating this bathhouse in honor of the idol, even though the idol was there first, that doesn't make the bathhouse a place prohibited to benefit from. And hence, Rabban Gamliel could have, under all circumstances, benefit, provided he's what's called shaloi b'toiva, provided that he's not giving, let's say, honor or acknowledging his benefit to the priests. V'ani Omer, this is Abaye's interpretation of Rav Chama. Rav Chama says, Eino genufa, that which Rabban Gamliel was saying, making this distinction in I was there first. In other words, it didn't come to me. I didn't come to it. It came to me. What he was saying is accurate. In other words, the fact that it was there first before the idol is what is the matir of Rabban Gamliel. Had the idol been there first, then in fact I would not have been able to go. And why is that? Shaloi b'toivas Rabban Gamliel. That would mean that Rabban Gamliel's use of a bathhouse, in the event that the idol was there first, his use of it in silence, k'b'toivas acherim dami, that would have been tantamount to someone else using it through acknowledging the priests. Rashi explains, Rabban Gamliel was a very important personality. And it would have been a favor to them. It would have been a positive gesture to the priests. By the mere fact that he's benefiting from them. He's benefiting from their bathhouse. The bathhouse that was made for the idol. Hilkoch, ilav merchutz koidem have, if not for the fact that the merchutz was really there first, as Rabban Gamliel said, osur kol hani, these things, the merchutz and the gina, would have been prohibited. In other words, we're making a distinction between the case of a bathhouse or garden made in honor of an idol. For a commoner to simply wander in there and use it and not say a word to the priests, or to stroll around in the garden and enjoying the beautiful botany, that would be okay for a commoner, provided he remains silent and doesn't acknowledge his enjoyment to the priests. However, Rabban Gamliel's entering these facilities in silence would be prohibited, because his presence there was an honor to, would have served as an honor to the priests. This is all true, provided or given that the idol was there first. But because the bathhouse was there first, Rabban Gamliel was claiming, I have all the right in the world to use it, because the idol has no right to come later and prevent me from using that which was mutter, that which was allowed in the first place. Rav Simi bar Chi Omar, Genufsa Mehocha. Rav Simi explains Rav Hoshaya's claim that there was inaccuracy in Rabban Gamliel from the following.
from the fact that he said
Zu omeres albiv v'chol ha'adam mashtinim b'faneha.
We saw this in the in section 3. It's interesting to note that Rav Simi Bar Chiya is referring back to the same section that the first opinion was addressing, but he looks at it from a different angle, and he says that in that first section, Rav Gamliel had said that, well, this idol is standing on the refuse pipe, the chol adam mashtinim b'faneha, and everyone is standing there urinating, which is not characteristic of an idol, and that's what Rav Gamliel was citing as justification for his being there. And let us say they would have urinated in front of that. Let us be more accurate. And by the fact that they were urinating in front of it, does that really justify Rabban Gamliel's position that this was a non-idol? Urination doesn't diminish from its idolatrous status. The Hatanan, we have a following source. Rok b'fanel, if an idol worshipper would spit in front of his idol, hishtin mifner, urinate in front of it, girah v'zorak bos hatzor, would drag it and throw at it some feces, hare zueino b'teila, that doesn't render it void, and it would still be usur. So you see that what Ramu was saying to Proclus was inaccurate. He was trying to justify his use of the bathhouse by declaring that this whole setup is a non-idolatrous setup by virtue of the fact that people are standing there and urinating in front of it. So it must be that it's not an idol. Here we see that that people are urinating in front of their idol, and it's not betela. It still remains a divinity in their eyes. The ani oimer eino genuva. And Rav Chama had responded that there is no inaccuracy, it's accurate what he said. Hossam, the source that was just cited that indicated Eino B'Tela, that's Lefi Shaita Hu Rosach Allah V'Hodr Mephayis Law. It was a momentary act of indignation where he spit at it or he urinated. It was a one-time urination. He must have been angry at his idol and did that disparaging act, but immediately immediately got on good with his idol. He was appeased afterwards. That's Mephias law. He immediately appeased the idol after that. Haha, but the case of the Aphrodite set up right next to a urination pipe called Shaita v'Shaita b'Zilzul Kaima. It's there on a constant basis. It's an ongoing, day in and day out, the masses are standing there and they're urinating in front of it. That's obviously then not an idol, because they would certainly not have done that to their idol. And hence Rabbi Gamliel justifies accurately his being there. Rabba Bar Ula Omar, this is their fourth approach, Genusa Mehocha. The inaccuracy of Rabbi Gamliel can be seen from the following. Rabbi Gamliel said to the Proclus, he says, Ein omrim nase merchatz noi lafruditi, elonas afruditi noi la merchatz. It was not said that the merchatz is a decoration or a beautification of the afruditi, but rather the afruditi was brought in as a beautification of the merchatz, as dedicated to the merchatz. Now, so that's what happened. In other words, that the Aphrodite was dedicated to the bathhouse. But had it been the other way around, then Rabbi Gamliel is suggesting there would have been a problem. We're asking, but that's true. That itself isn't true. V'chi oimrim nase merchatz noi l'Aphrodite, my have. And even if it were the other way around, which Rabbi Gamliel intimated was a problem, isn't a problem. And even if they did say, let the merchatz be a noi, a beautification of the Aphrodite, mayhave, still it wouldn't be prohibited. V'hatanya, we have the following Tanaic source. Ho'imer b'yezeh lo'idus v'chomim. someone who says, I'm dedicating this house to the idol. I'm dedicating this cup to the idol. Lo amar klum. His comment, his dedication is of no consequence. She'ein hektish lavodas kovim. The concept of dedications, and hence taking on the status of something dedicated to an idol, never takes hold. The concept of dedications, that may be true, lahavdil, with regard to the Beis HaMikdash, but not true with regard to idols. V'ani omer, this would be Rav Chama's response, according to Rabba Bar Ula, eino genuva. There is no inaccuracy. In other words, what Rav Gamliel intimated was that had it been such that they said, let the merchas be a noi lafroditi, that would have posed a problem. That is true. It would have posed a problem. Nehi ditzri lo mitzra. Granted that the bathhouse would not be usher as a mishamish avodah zarah, it wouldn't have been an usher as something, let's say, with the iser of avodah zarah. However, noi mi'aika, but nevertheless, there is an element of it being a beautification of the Avodah Zarah. And Rav Gamliel would not have taken advantage of something that would be classified as a beautification of the Avodah Zarah, even though it doesn't have the din, it doesn't have the legal classification as something with idolatrous status to it. But even so, since it was there as a beautification of the Avodah Zarah, he would not have benefited from it. So his only his explanation, the reason he was there, is because the bathhouse was not a beautification of Avodah Zarah, but the Avodah Zarah was brought in to beautify the bathhouse. So the basic bathhouse itself is not at all in service or a beautification to the idol. Hence, I had a right to be there. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.